Let's just get right into this. What's up, y'all, and welcome to the Soccer Comic Rant. My name is Ian Edwards, and thanks, Stu. It's going to turn off the AC so you don't hear it during the broadcast. And yeah, you can, if you're listening, you're probably listening to this podcast at allthingscomedy.com, SoundCloud, iTunes, Libsyn, probably Stitcher, and some other shit I could make up. Our sponsor is onthevolleyapparel.com. What up, Elvis? Hung out with him for some of the World Cup games, and he did one of the podcasts during the World Cup. But if you go to onthevolleyapparel.com, you'll go there and see some great gear that Elvis Company makes and creates with great designs, tank tops, t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts with hip-hop soccer emblems up to date. And the stuff that I wear, whenever I walk around, people do usually ask me, where did I get that? So that's pretty cool. So that's how you know it's hot. And you can use my promo code Comic Rant, get 20% off. So go check out onthevolleyapparel.com. And I'm here with the homie Stu.
Hey.
What up, fam?
Life's good, man.
Life's good. We started this World Cup together.
Yes.
And we're going to finish it together. We finished it together.
Yeah. And, we've started it, and goddamn it, we will finish it.
And we will finish it. And I tried to get Sharf because he was there the first 5 a.m. in the morning game at the parlor with us.
Yeah, but I think I'm still recovering from waking up that early.
Right. like I tried to ask you that question earlier, like how you're feeling.
Yeah, I'm feeling okay.
You feeling okay?
Yeah, there was something. It did feel weird to wake up and not have a game that I'm rushing to avoid my girlfriend to watch.
That's hilarious.
It's like, why are you up this early?
Yeah, like a lot of people who broke up during the World Cup can try to make amends and get back with their girl. Mm-hmm. Like, it's like breaking up with your chick before Christmas so you don't have to buy her a gift. Like, mm-hmm. if you broke up because you knew she wouldn't agree with you watching every game of the World Cup, now's your time to get back. Like, I myself this morning, I woke up at 4 a.m., meditated, jumped in the shower, changed, put on some clothes, mm-hmm. drove to the parlor, and was wondering why they weren't open at 5 a.m. in the morning to show the game. And then I realized, oh, shit, we watched the final the day before.
Yeah.
And, yeah, it's definitely going to go through some withdrawal symptoms for this.
Yeah, I'll get some withdrawal, but I also know that I am looking forward to waking up at normal hours.
Having a life. Yeah.
Not having to adjust my entire day around like having a nap
in the middle
of the day.
I was definitely hostage to the World Cup for sure. Yeah. No question.
And I got to say, if you are in a relationship and you were experiencing some turmoil because you were watching the World Cup so much, or your significant other was watching it so much, well, I think soccer fandom is a pretty reasonable one to have as far as the amount of screen time or the amount of watch time. It's not like baseball where you have,
one baseball game
to watch
lasts the entire length of the World Cup.
Yeah.
Pretty much.
Yeah.
7 innings or 9. Oh, yeah. I forgot. 9 innings.
Yeah.
They have a 7 inning stretch.
Yeah, it's, it only comes around during specific times. When it's over, it's over.
Every 4 years, yeah.
Yeah. And even if, I also will watch other tournaments. Well, I think we've talked about the Euros and the Women's World Cup will be next year.
Oh, yeah. In Russia.
In Russia?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that one was also in Russia.
Which makes sense. I didn't know that's how they did it. I didn't realize that's how they did it until now, but it makes sense. You have all the facilities set up.
Yeah.
You might as well run it again.
Yeah, you might as well get a little more bang for your buck.
Like they do the Special Olympics in the same city as the Olympics, right? Maybe months later or a year later.
That makes sense.
So that makes sense. Like everything is set up.
Yeah, the volunteers don't have to take that much time off.
Yeah. And then
I assume they're the same.
Maybe there might be some volunteers more equipped than others.
Sure, some of them are specially trained.
Yeah,
kiosk people.
You know,
ticket takers.
Yeah, food, hot dog people.
Yeah,
all that stuff. So yeah, I'm definitely gonna go through some World Cup withdrawals. I feel like I had a friend in town that I hadn't seen in 4 years, and it was a pain in the ass to get up to take them around town.
Yeah, but they wanted to see everything.
Because they wanted to see everything. But when once we saw everything, I appreciated seeing everything.
Yeah.
And there's just so many amazing moments of this World Cup, man. This is how you do a World Cup. And I don't know if any props of it goes to Russia, because they were certainly a part of the excitement. Like their team?
Their team was part of the excitement in that they were surprising. There were a number of surprisingly good teams that showed up, and just as many teams that were surprisingly...
better than we thought.
Yeah, or surprisingly, you know, ill-equipped to make it to the final stages.
Right.
You know, it's...
Like Germany,
like Argentina, like Portugal, like Spain, like Brazil.
Right.
You know, those guys, you know, all five of those teams would have been, you know, would have been favorites to make it all the way. I did a little bracket of the final four teams I had. I only had France making it to the semifinal.
You did?
Correctly.
But I also
had Brazil, Germany, and Argentina making it to the
semifinal. Yeah, and Belgium. That's who I had in my head. I never did a bracket, but all those teams, Argentina, Brazil, Belgium, France, didn't have Croatia, didn't have England.
No.
And then you also get screwed if when you start a bracket, you don't know who's going to end up on what side of the bracket. So that kind of kills it too.
Yeah,
like Argentina lost to France.
Yeah.
And if they didn't lose to France, they might have gotten further. So you end up on the same side of the bracket, then it kind of fucks your predictions up. But
yeah.
Most predictions weren't off. Like Croatia got into the final. That's one of the teams I didn't expect to. But in retrospect, when I look at Croatia, they have one of the best midfields in the tournament.
Yeah.
So why not?
Yeah, best midfield in the tournament. And, you know, they would say they have the greatest defense in the tournament. It didn't turn out to be that way, but
Lovren, Dejan Lovren, like after they beat England, right? Which you should have beat England. Your midfield's way more experienced, and you have the same amount of grit, but you have the creativity in there too. You have a midfielder that won Champions Leagues. Mm-hmm. You have midfielders in there, and that's just won everything. So Devon Lovren was like, I am one of the best defenders in the world. First, I didn't believe he said it. I saw a quote, and I was like, man, he didn't say that shit. There's no way that humble, smart man would say that shit. But he said, I am one of the best defenders in the world. I've taken Liverpool to the Champions League final, and then I've taken Croatia to the World Cup final. I'm one of the best defenders in the world. And then you got shelled in both of them.
Bro. Yeah. I wonder if he said it, because I didn't see the video of him saying it. I wonder if he said it in such a way where it's like, it's kind of that Eastern European frankness where it's not quite, it doesn't sound like bragging, but when you actually read it, you know, listen to what the person's saying, it's like, oh, you're bragging.
It sounded like he'd been taking a lot of heat, and this was a moment to finally vindicate himself and tell people they were wrong.
So he's being defensive about being the best defender.
Yeah, yeah. So it's kind of like, but then you just have to wait.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to wait. Like Paul Pogba. Now go ahead. What are you going to say?
I was just saying, you can't say it. You just can't say it prematurely.
Just don't say it.
Yeah.
I know people have been getting on your nerves, but just don't say shit.
I think you get a little bit more right to say something like that if you win those final games.
Right. I mean, semifinals is far, man. The finals is it. You know?
Yeah, so the finals is it. But I mean, to take your team.
But I don't. I wouldn't even
take your team to the finals like that. You know, I in high school, my high school made it to the finals of our, you know, playoff tournament.
We won.
And we were a little school. We're playing against other little schools. Good. I'm bragging amongst dwarves.
Bragging amongst dwarves.
Yeah, dwarf schools.
I'm bragging amongst little people.
Yeah, little schools.
Mm-hmm.
But we got second 4 years in a row.
Oh, damn.
I was part of that team two of those years.
Yeah.
And I was like, all right, well, you could argue we were one of the best teams. You know, you're the Buffalo Bills
of little schools.
Yeah, we're the Buffalo Bills of tiny ass Bay Area schools.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you couldn't. you couldn't you can't call a team that gets second place 4 years in a row a dynasty.
No. Almost though.
Yeah, you got to win.
Yeah.
You got to see it through if you're going to call yourself that great.
Yeah, because there's one team that made it to the final once and probably won.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, you made it four times and didn't.
Yeah, we lost to, I think, four different schools.
Yeah, four different schools, yeah. So just on that, what do you think was the difference? Why didn't you guys win? Like, what got you there and what wasn't enough to take it over the top?
The first time it happened, I wasn't part of the team. I was part of like the middle mm-hmm. 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
The first time they lost, I went to the game mm-hmm. just to support.
Right.
And I might have gotten to play with that team, but I had gotten injured and they moved some guys up from JV up to varsity, mm-hmm. but I wasn't able to be one of those people. So I go, and I think it was one of those things where it was a close game, but they got edged out.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the second year when I was a part of it, it was a similar thing, but it was just like a 1-0 game.
Right.
It was like a lucky goal. It just didn't work out.
Right.
And then the second, my senior year, we got blown out.
Damn.
It was just one of those things where it's like, a couple lucky goals make it in early, kind of like the final was. It's like an own goal happens, a lucky free kick that just goes in, mm-hmm. and then it just kind of crumbles from there.
Right.
It got to the point where their star player he scored one from like half field.
Damn. Son.
Yeah, like he whipped it
He's
in.
He's like, why not? This is going our way all day.
Yeah, like our keeper was like pushing up, trying to
get involved in play.
And he plays a long ball. It doesn't go to one of our guys. It goes to this guy, and he just quickly traps it and whips it back over, kind of like the way Zlatan has scored some of those goals. And it went over him, and it was just kind of like the final straw.
Damn.
And it's one of those things, but it's high school. I mean, it would have been nice to win one, but. Sometimes the team you go up against just, wants it more, is better equipped for that day.
So you think that all four times those teams wanted it more? Do you feel that or no?
Because
I don't think that's necessarily a thing.
I think that could have played a factor. I don't think it's the only thing.
Right.
I think it's also those teams are sometimes just better equipped.
Right.
And they weren't teams that we played all the time. So they're a better team that year.
And it may be because you're in it a few years in a row, after the second year or even after the first year, whoever's playing is going to scout you more.
Yeah. They get a bit of a complex, the team that's lost it and then goes back to the final.
Mm-hmm.
So, kind of like, I'm sure the Netherlands has a bit of a complex about making it to the World Cup final.
I don't know.
They've been to it so many times.
Netherlands?
Yeah. They've
to been. The World Cup final? Mm-hmm. How many times they've been?
I think they've been to it at least four times in the World Cup history.
Oh, for real?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not four consecutive times.
Right, right.
But yeah, I think you get a complex about it eventually.
Right. I mean, I know England had a complex and they...
About PKs?
About just getting to the semis, because we always lost in the quarterfinals when we should have won, or in the semis.
Mm-hmm.
Or just getting to the quarterfinals. And then lately we haven't even been getting out of the group stages. And we've just been losing people we should beat, or... Even against Germany, I think, in one of those, we've outplayed people and still lost. Yeah. It just didn't. I remember in one World Cup, the Beckham one against Argentina, we had mm-hmm. Owens and just everybody. Beckham gets thrown out the game and we lose. Something always happens. So then it becomes a thing. And then I was listening to interviews and Scholes and them just didn't have, as great as they were, they didn't think they were better than other people. From other teams,
that's mentality is a big thing.
Yeah, it's huge.
If you got to go into a game believing you can win it.
Perspective is everything. It determines pretty much everything in life: who you are, what you are, and what you ask for and what you get.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I wonder if the entire team of Croatia
mm-hmm.
walked into the final. Believing as a unit that they could win it.
I do, because the way they came out against France mm-hmm. was like, we want this. And then I knew France would win this game based on how they approached the Belgium game.
Mm.
because they approached the Belgian game very defensively. So that means as a team, they were listening to a plan because they have all these wild horses and they can attack you, and they chose not to. They decided to be cagey and to read and react. Mm-hmm. And everybody did their job. So then I was like, oh, so if a team can switch plans on a game-to-game basis, this is a real team.
Yeah.
Like this is not a team to be fucked with, because they can strategize and roll with it. And then I think losing the Euros, like they just couldn't lose this. If you lost the Euros and you lose this, you're the opposite equivalent of the French team that you look up to 20 years ago that won the Euros and the World Cup. You're like the guys that it just would have been bad.
Yeah.
It would have been bad for Pogba. That's why I'm happy. It's like, listen, Paul Pogba is a great player. He doesn't have to win something. He doesn't have to win a premiership for you to be like, stop dancing or stop doing your hair. He's doing all those things. He's a great player. That's just his personality is being positive. And so I'm so happy nobody can say shit now. Like even I think Roy Keane on the thing said, yeah, he can change his haircut as much as he wants now. Mm-hmm. And he should have been able to do that. Like I get it. Like when somebody doesn't win, you pick at things, but I don't think Paul Pogba had hairstyles when he was at Juventus and he went to the Champions League finals and won multiple Scudettos. Mm-hmm. It's like, what, you don't count the Italian league as an accomplishment?
Yeah, I think people forget about, you know, what's going on in Italy when soccer and soccer commentary are so English centric.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And
but Buffon is great, but
yeah.
And everybody else on the team is great.
Yeah, and Buffon also won a World Cup 12 years ago.
Yeah.
I think winning the World Cup for a soccer player is kind of like winning an Oscar as an actor.
That's your shut the fuck up critics thing.
It's your shut up. I can now do whatever I want.
Or I'm going to continue doing what I want, but now you can't say shit because those things didn't stop me. It's just 2 years ago I was young. Mm-hmm. And now in the World Cup, we won this.
Yeah.
You know, and Pogba's just going to continue to be great.
Yeah. If you,
I'm happy for him.
Yeah. And I think, and all those players are on track to, you know, continue a great career.
You know,
a lot of them are already at great clubs. Mm-hmm. The ones that are not will have more leverage to be traded to a better club if they so choose.
Like Pavard.
Yeah, Pavard's at Stuttgart. Right?
I don't know where Hernandez is.
I don't either.
And Varane can't be traded to anywhere else better. And Umtiti can't be traded to anywhere else better.
No.
Because they're at Barca and Real Madrid.
Yep. So they all...
Conte.
Conte's at Chelsea.
He's at Chelsea, so he can't be traded. He can be. I don't know why more people aren't after him.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, he might have a sweet deal. He might really like being at Chelsea. You know, having visited different cities in England where, you know, the training ground is where, you know, the part of the city, mm-hmm. you know, it's like, I've been to Stamford Bridge. I've also been to Anfield. Mm-hmm. And though, you know, those are different parts of the world and parts of England. Mm-hmm. So he's like, you also got to be comfortable, like living where you're going to live.
Right.
And sure, they might all have big houses with, you know, a bunch of fuck you money, but mm-hmm. you know, you also have to, you know, if some of those people have families, some of them have kids, you know, I'm sure some of them consider that to a degree when they consider like their well-being.
They always bring it up when it's funny. You use those things when you want to accept more money somewhere or when you want to stay somewhere. So mm-hmm. I don't know. I mean, Chelsea is probably a more comfortable part of the world than Liverpool.
Yeah,
because I've been to Warrington and around and been to Liverpool and I've been to Manchester and Chelsea's more plush. But
there's,
I'm just
cities,
when I say more,
cities, but they're out there.
Yeah, I would just say, how come you know, when you hear trade rumors, there's not Real Madrid trying to get a Conte, or not that they don't need him because they have Cruz and
Modric.
Yeah, well, defensively, they have Cruz and Casemiro.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they're set.
Yeah, so maybe they've just, their lineup's been stacked enough that they don't need an extra.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I know there was some talk about Real going for someone like Hazard.
Right.
But, you know.
Hazard is good, but...
Even those guys on Belgium, they all have better asking power.
Yeah.
Even better than what they got from the Euros and the last World Cup.
Right. I'm a Man U fan, so this is what I think they should do. I think Fellaini's stock has gone up. He's in his late 20s. Like, I think you sell him or trade him to somebody to get a more attacking midfielder. Because what I like him, and I don't mind if we keep him, but we have so many Fellaini-style players on our team.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? You think we got McTominay, Matic, who else we got? I'm blanking. And then
you got
Herrera.
Yeah, I mean, you got Pogba in the middle too, and Pogba's another tall center midfielder.
Right, but he's more creative.
Mm-hmm.
But and then they used Fellaini so sparingly last year. It's like when we went down a goal, they used him. But I say, hey, if you're going to use him, put him in early to go up a goal. Mm-hmm. But yeah, we still have Mata. It's not the same position, but we have some extras. And we had to make money off those extras so we can bring in. I think we do need definitely another attacking midfielder.
Mm-hmm.
And then, I heard we're trying to get Bale, which I'm down with that.
I mean, there's an attacking midfielder if I ever saw one.
Yeah. And get Bale and let him do what he used to do when he's with Spurs.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, just run down the wing.
Just run down the wing. And he played, I think, on the left side then.
Yeah.
And then you could move Rashford and Martial to the right. Because Martial has a right.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't have a left. He cuts in and tries to take that post-stamp goal.
Yeah.
All the time.
Yeah.
And his crosses aren't great. That's why he dribbles all the way in before trying to pass it. Because his left foot crosses aren't that great.
Mm.
To put him on the right, if that's where he belongs.
That's amazing to me that pros can be... so one-footed.
Yeah.
Because I remember my coach is always telling me that even as a left-footed mm-hmm. left back, they're always like, you need to be two-footed.
Yeah.
You need to... Your stock will go up
right.
as a player if you're two-footed.
Right.
And I did my best. And I got to be much better over right. time. I wouldn't say I was like, you know, on equal footing, you know, or mm-hmm. ambidexterity, but, you know... It's crazy that someone at the highest level can just be, you know, left foot's only for balance.
I know, but it's like you know it, but then you're like, shit, I'm playing for Manchester United. This, what the fuck is my coach talking about? You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's up to the individual to be like, if I got this far with one foot, what the fuck is this guy talking about?
Yeah,
but
I'm fine.
Yeah, I'm fine. You know, I'm a millionaire with one foot.
Yeah.
Yeah. So then you're like, yeah. If you're trying to get in, and that's 2 foot. It's an opportunity. Then you'll do it. If you're hungry and you're starving.
Yeah, it's all incentive based.
Yeah. It's all incentive based.
Yeah. Okay.
But so as far as the let's talk finals and then semis. We'll go all over the place. What did you think of the final?
I was impressed with the number of goals that were scored in the final.
Right.
Because I've been used to there only being one, maybe two goals.
Yeah.
In, I think, the bulk of my World Cup watching experience.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there was last two were 1-0. One before that went to PKs.
Right.
Of which I think, you know, it was... And then I think before that was Brazil beating Germany in 0-2.
2-0.
2-0.
And then France beat... Brazil 2-0 before that.
Might have been 3-0 even.
I think it was two. Okay. The two Ronaldo goals. I could be wrong.
Well, yeah. There's, so either way, I mean, I started watching the World Cup like most of the way through in 2002. And right. so that was, you know, it was great to see a bit of a shootout with, and I think even though Croatia came in with all that fire to start, I think the Mandzukic own goal really took a lot of the wind out of their sails,
even though they got one back right away.
Yeah, I think it's still you're still playing catch up. There seemed to be a mentality that they're still trying to like catch up, and they never did.
I think I wouldn't even say the penalty hurt them, because they went back to business the way they. After that, like, because they had a mentality, but I think ultimately Croatia believed in themselves too much, and that's what might have put them in trouble. Like, they were like, finally, after beating England and all those other teams, they're like, fuck it, we're good, let's go for it. And they really came out and they pressured France, and they opened themselves up, and then, you know, you get your corner, and that ends up being an own goal penalty, and then you get this other corner. Was that a corner? It was a free kick. It was a free kick from Griezmann being fouled.
Yeah.
Which I looked at that foul this morning, and I'm not sure that was a foul. Mm-hmm. So,
I'm not even sure I'm not entirely sure the penalty was a penalty.
I was looking at that this morning, and I went back and forth so many times.
Yeah.
But then here's what made me say it was a penalty. Because I know, like, I just remember some of the first Croatia game I watched. And I remember some of the Croatian players cheating. So I'm like,
okay. How do you mean?
Just like, Srbicic, what's the forward? He came off, I think it's Srbicic.
This is a forward for Croatia?
Yeah, I think so. Or Zubicic or something like that. There's one player. He had some nasty fouls and he should have been sent off.
Oh, really?
Right. So I was like, oh, okay, these guys don't mind playing down and dirty. But here's the thing about the penalty. I think it was great acting. That's the reason why I say it's because it's great acting. But the penalty was this. The cross comes in, Matuidi heads the ball. Now, when the player... And that was Perisic.
Perisic, yeah.
Perisic. He jumped. His hand was up, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then when the ball was going to go between his knee and his arm, he brought his hand down. Now, he made it look like a natural movement, but you're bringing your hand down to block something.
Yeah.
It's not like so normally when you jump, you need your arms to jump, but you don't need it to come down to meet your knee. And to me, that's you're doing that reflexively. You see it and you're like, I'm going to try to play this off. That's what I felt. So I'm like, and you could get away with it, but I've seen them call that. So it wasn't weird for it to be a penalty.
Okay.
Yeah. Like, he jumped up and then went like, and then he brought his knees and his hand together. Uh-huh. And it's like, it's fast, but that might be a penalty.
Yeah. Yeah, it in real time it happened so quickly that it just didn't seem like it's like maybe it is maybe it isn't.
I feel you. I might watch it again and be like, it's not a penalty.
Ha.
I'm serious. It was just like that. But then I was like, let me make a decision. And I looked at it again. I was like, he's bringing his hand down, and you don't have to do that,
right?
Yeah. So I was like, penalty. Fuck it.
Yeah. But I think when the penalty kick happened, I know even though it happened so close to halftime, I feel like there seemed to be an air of like, I think later you could see it. It was wearing on the Croatian players. Like,
but to me, I'm like, I saw them go down against other teams and come back. So this is completely within their realm. Like, going down one goal is their thing. That's Croatia's jam. Yeah. And then they'll tie you and take you. They know how to attack you, get the goal back, and not expose themselves. Mm-hmm. But the difference is you're trying to get a goal back against a team that's better than all the teams you've played. And that's why I think France is better. Yeah. Like you have a midfield of Matuidi, Pogba, very underrated, and people shitting on him, you know what I'm saying? And Conte, who, you know, it's almost a penalty when he has to come out the game because he has stomach problems and he's playing in a game he shouldn't have started.
He had stomach problems?
Yeah, something was up with his stomach. And I thought it was a yellow card. That's why they took him out. But he's definitely, yeah, they took him out and they put Nzonzi in. But just that midfield, just those two guys against, it's like, it's just a more creative midfield than England had. Mm-hmm. You know, the guys that can hold the ball, they're not afraid to hold the ball. And then not only would they hold it, like the shit that Hernandez did to get, to make that turn on that defender and go up the line and cross it into Mbappe.
Yeah.
Like, you're playing players like that that you didn't play against before. Yeah. Like, Russia didn't have that shit. Denmark didn't have that shit.
Yeah.
England didn't have that shit. It's like, what are you going to do now, Croatia? Like, there's a reason why everybody figured France would win this tournament. Mm-hmm. It's because they had great individuals, but the coach made them a team. And yeah. So therefore, a closed fist will punch the fuck out of you.
Yeah.
So I think they deserve it.
Yeah. You know, and they show that they were a better team, you know, for 90 minutes.
Yeah.
You know, it wasn't a thing where they were better for 89 of them. They were better for 90 minutes.
And then what's his name said something like, some people are like, well, Croatia pressured them and came out the best team. It's like, and then somebody said something important, like, you're a good team when you know how to have control of the game when you don't have the ball. And I didn't see France look stressed once when Croatia was pressing them.
No.
They didn't get great shots. But when they got their chance, they scored. It's like, mm-hmm. Yeah, you have the ball and you look like you're impressively being aggressive against us. And then another thing Croatia tried, they started moving the ball from side to side, which is what they started to do in the second half against England. So, you know, the ball's on one side of the field and you cross it over. You keep shifting the defense until it's like an earthquake. It keeps shaking and then there's the hole. Right. France didn't give them that hole, this experience and just good field generalship. So, like, you're good enough not to give them the hole in the middle that they're trying to create by shifting your defense. That's just good team shit. They're just better than anybody Croatia played. And Croatia played some good teams. You played the best. And the best one.
Yeah, do you think Croatia was the best team that France played this entire World Cup?
Even if they weren't, it just speaks highly of France.
Yeah.
Because Belgium was probably better.
Yeah.
But I think Croatia might have been able to beat Belgium. And on any given day, I think those two teams could beat each other.
Mm.
But Belgium was probably better.
Yeah. You know?
But I knew France was going to win once they won the Belgian game, and Hazard was pissed and called them playing anti-football and was trashing them. Like,
what was he called? Why was he saying they were playing anti-football?
He said, I think one of the Belgian players said, one of the, either did De Bruyne or Hazard said, I'd rather have lost to Brazil than played against this defensive shell thing that of not playing football that France put up. I guess they were pissed that they lost and they felt like they played better. Again, just because you have the ball doesn't mean you're playing better.
Yeah.
You know? But his, and something that I did notice by watching, I watched France's journey in the World Cup. So I watched, like, they had this thing on the Fox where you could see, like, highlights of all the games they played and the highlights of all the games that Croatia played until they meet each other. And it's a weird coincidence, but France won the World Cup once. Mm-hmm. And when they played Croatia in the semifinals, and a defender, Lilian Thuram, scored two goals in the semifinals to get France to the finals. And France met Belgium in the semifinals, right?
Yeah.
And a defender scores the goal that gets them through to the finals and they win again. So that's just like a weird MTT score with a header. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a weird coincidence.
It's a weird coincidence, yeah.
Yeah, I think there's something, you know, it's great. I think the best teams in the World Cup are the ones who are able to spread out the goals amongst a bunch of different players. Mm-hmm. You know, that's what made Belgium great. That's what made France great. I think, you know, Croatia, you know, there were a lot of goals that were scored by different players on the field.
Right.
You know, Mandžukić scored. I think Modric scored. You know, Rakitic scored.
And Rakitic
Vida scored.
And another thing I noticed today too, that Rakitic had to take the crucial penalty in two penalty shootouts. The penalty that got them past the team they were playing, like the one that said, "If he scores this, they beat Russia. If he scores this, they beat Denmark." And Rakitic did that. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's, you know, giving props for being ice cold.
Yeah.
Yeah. And ultimately, Croatia is happy. They have people celebrating, saying, "I'm proud to be Croatian," all online, because they did something they didn't expect to do. And there's a lot of people that left the World Cup happy without winning it. England was one team.
Yeah. You know, for Croatia and England, it's, and Belgium even, it's,
yeah,
it's
the, and Belgium, yeah, they celebrating.
It's better than most of those teams. It's better than those teams have done in at least a very long time.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, for Belgium and Croatia, it's the best those teams have done ever.
Let me show you something weird. I'm see if I can find my computer. This is fucking weird.
I was ready to see something weird on the internet.
So this is weird. So Croatia, did I see it on YouTube? Let me go to YouTube.
Mm.
This is so weird, man.
You search for weird things on the internet often?
Nah, you know, this is not traditionally weird.
But sometimes it finds you.
But yeah. You start looking and shit'll come. So, and it's not something that you expect. I'm having trouble spelling Belgium, by the way.
You got it?
I'm typing because my finger's fucked up. So I can't like just...
Yeah, no, I got you.
Yeah. I wonder if they'll show it. So look, they got home. They're celebrating. It's huge.
Yeah.
Look. Isn't that weird? I'm just pointing to Thierry Henry.
Oh, that Thierry Henry is playing? Or that
he because he was their coach.
Yeah, he's the assistant coach.
But you're fucking... This is like you're ostracizing yourself from France. You're the legend. Your team, France, this guy's here and he should be in France jumping up and down with those players. Like, that's fucking weird. Like, him on his balcony applauding. This is just weird for the third place team. Not me. I can understand it if your team didn't even make it and you had a shit year, but for him to be there... Like, right there. Like, he's got to feel... I'm saying he's got to feel like, this is cool, but I should be on this same balcony in France right now celebrating with my team. This makes it so
I think this
odd.
I think this is one day that he has to be in Belgium.
I'll get sick, bro. I did my job. Is the contract say you have to come to the third place to our celebration when we get home?
I wouldn't be surprised if for coaching staff, it's a mandatory thing. You know, I think the players, they show up, they can get out of there. There's a car in the, you know,
can the
back.
Players not show up for this? I think the players have to show up for
players,
this more than the
players
show.
And coaching staff, I think, have to show up to this kind of thing. And you know, and also, you know, Henri should be proud, you know, even though it's not his home country, it's something that he was instrumental in.
He tried to stop his home country from winning a World Cup. This is it's unspoken treason in a sense, but not intentional, but it's still he just got himself in a position that is can't be comfortable.
Yeah, I mean, but a gig's a gig.
In real life. A gig's a gig, yeah, but...
Yeah, if he was asked to coach at France, I'm sure he would take that job as well. But I think, you know...
I read a thing, because I'm about an article about it, and it's like, he hasn't been in contact with the French FA since he's retired that much. And it's not... Because somebody said, how did he end up coaching for Belgium? So he hasn't been in contact with the French FA a lot. And after he retired, he was doing pundit work. And then, I don't know, I guess him and Martinez have done pundit work. I just don't... It's just weird. Sure. It happened.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know why one gig happens over another, but I mean... Or if there's something, you know, underlying going on with, you know, Henri and the French FA. But, you know, if there's tons of coaches that have coached other right. teams. I mean, I think, you know.
But do you end up coaching against your home team that you won a World Cup with in the semifinals to try to stop them from winning the final that they eventually won?
Yeah, it's awkward. But I think if I remember correctly, I mean, he was pretty cordial with Deschamps. After the
right,
after
I mean, you have to be. That's the thing. That's your teammate too.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you assistant coaching with your teammate?
I'm sure.
And there's young forwards on that team that need your tutelage.
I'm sure if the opportunity was available to him, I don't see why he wouldn't take it, unless there was some personal grievance that he had with the French FA.
Right. I mean, sometimes things just happen and they happen.
Yeah,
and
he might have already had a contract.
And I'm not saying he shouldn't have taken the job. I just say, I like him so much. I just don't want anything to be tarnished for him.
Yeah,
in his home country.
And maybe he might not have great coaching experience. I mean, he's a good player. He's a great player.
Right. This is his coaching experience to get him what he ultimately wants to be the head coach of a club team or. Can he coach his country?
Yeah, maybe down the line he can. I mean, there have been so many players from that era in France that are gearing up to be some of the greatest coaches of our time. You know, Deschamps winning the World Cup, you know, Zidane winning three.
And Blanc, PSG.
Who?
Is it Blanc that coached PSG?
That I don't know.
PSG first started like winning, they had another French player, Laurent Blanc. Who played with Zidane and Deschamps on the 98 team or and so they've had success from those players.
Yeah, Patrick Vieira is also coaching.
Yeah, where is he now? He went to Italy.
Yeah,
now?
Yeah, I think he's at Roma.
There you go. Let's find out.
Yeah, he was at NYCFC.
Yeah,
and I think he just took the job at Roma. There's there's a lot of great, you know, French. Oh, he's managing at Nice.
Nice, yeah.
Okay,
I had a feeling it was an N team.
Yeah, but you know, it's one of those things where that's what happens when you have a great squad. I mean, there's the possibility of there being some great coaches who have that experience. And they're going to end up coaching all over. And not all of them are going to get to coach France.
All right. Can I tell you something that's also a surprise about France?
Sure.
They had 50 players in the World Cup.
50 players in the World Cup?
Yeah. So, I was on YouTube this morning. Some people say nerding it out, but, you know.
Whatever you want to call it.
Whatever you call it. I'm just learning some shit.
Mm.
So... France, after the World War, had, you know, the country was destroyed. Everything was bombed. So they hired a bunch of immigrants from other countries and from their former colonies to come in and help as labor, help rebuild the country. Then maybe in the 40s-ish or sometime, the country started booming and they couldn't keep up with, they need more laborers. So then they... brought in people from African nations and
other colonies,
and colonies and stuff again to help And then also, like in the 60s, France didn't make the World Cup. So then they, you know, for like 3 years in a row, around some time like that. So then they started like a grassroots thing where they restructured their youth program. Mm-hmm. So then now the kids of all these immigrants, like Zidane and Vieira and Henri, mm-hmm. those guys ended up in the youth systems. And most of the youth, their main youth system is in Paris. So Mbappe's from Paris. Mm-hmm. And so let's go to the 98 team. So the 98 team was mixed with immigrant children. And like Zidane, you know.
Yeah, Zidane's from Algeria.
He's from Algeria. And that was a big thing. And that helped kind of meld the country together a little bit, like more making more accepting of their immigrants. But then after that, more immigrant sex in France later. You get Mbappe and Pogba, and then there's a bunch of other players that grew up in France that were born in France that didn't make the French squad, where in FIFA you can play for the country of your parents' origin. Mm-hmm. So then there was Algerian players, some Moroccan players were born in France. Mm-hmm. One of the Portugal players was born in France. And then there's Congo and Tonga and just other countries. Those countries weren't in there, but there's like Ivory Coast players. There's other players from other, like Nigeria, I think, and some other places. Their players were born in France, but they ended up playing for those. So France had 50 players in the World Cup. That's how strong French football is.
Oh, I see.
That's how strong French football is. Like 20 and then what's great about the internet now? Like you see Paul Pogba with like Instagram stories and whatever, take the camera. You always wonder what happens after the World Cup. Mm-hmm. And I saw a video of Paul Pogba taking his camera phone into the locker room, seeing all the people in the locker room celebrating with the president, making him dab. And then the players like Kochelny, who I'm not sure if he was injured or didn't make the team.
I think he was injured.
He was in the locker room, and Payet.
Mm-hmm. Also injured.
Like, they didn't play Payet.
Yeah, he got injured. He got injured in the Europa League.
I mean,
like, a couple game, you know, like one of the late stages of the Europa League.
I forgot they had a Payet. Mm-hmm. And he was like, Pop was trying to include him in it. And he's like smiling in there, but you could tell it's like, man, he missed out on this great thing. Mm-hmm. And then you see Desai was in the locker room, and he's a teammate of Deschamps. And it's just great to see. Oh, you always wonder what happens after the World Cup. What are the players doing? Like, I'd just be always that excited. And you see them in the locker room celebrating. They're singing. And you see who's really friends with who.
Yeah.
And shit like that. And it was fun. Pogba was just having fun. He was just being him. But now he has the freedom. Imagine just finally being granted the permission to be you without somebody being able to criticize you now because you've won the ultimate thing. But you can only win the ultimate thing in order for people to not be able to criticize you. Like, you can't, like, most people, 99 more than 99% of the people in the world won't win the ultimate thing in whatever they're into, and they have freedom. And this guy who isn't free wasn't free until yesterday.
I think that exists in every industry. You know, like, you wanna be the best at what you do, but you know, there's only so many spots at the top. And I see it in the world of comedy and entertainment, as I'm sure you do to a degree. And I think there's a certain level that people reach, and ideally you reach that level of comfort where you get to be yourself before you get the accolades. Cause you know, I feel like one can beget the other.
Right.
But ideally, you sort of figure out who you are and what you, you know, what your skills really are, mm-hmm. and to use them to the best of your ability, and then you know the magic comes from there.
Right.
For a lot of these guys, the magic was there, the ability was there. It was just a matter of it, you know, it was just a matter of time before they got something.
Right. And that's the thing. Like, people aren't giving them the time. Mm-hmm. You know, they like, as soon as they fail or don't win something, you have to listen to people shit on you. Like, tons of people shit. And 'cause people can, the same way you can get to people, they can get to you through your phone. Mm-hmm. And you have to do that and still stay mentally strong. Like, yeah. Pop was mentally strong. He endures lots of criticism through untraditional channels and through traditional channels. Like, if every Man U player that's a pundit, mm-hmm, gets at him.
Yeah.
You know, that's a lot of shit to take. And he's always like, I'm just going to do what I do and remain positive. And now,
yeah, don't read your at mentions.
Yeah.
On Twitter.
Yeah. But you're going to hear it, you know?
Yeah.
And you're on your phone now. You bring it around with you. But I just think that. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy for everybody that overcame some adversity during this World Cup. And
yeah,
you know, any team, any player.
Yeah, I think it was definitely more than the French team. A lot of teams overcame a lot to you end up wherever they ended up.
Right. Everybody got, like, the teams. I mean, I don't know what Messi's life is like right now.
Messi.
Yeah.
It's probably Messi right now.
Yeah. Yeah, Messi, yeah.
I would have liked to have seen more of Mohamed Salah.
Right.
But, you know, it wasn't in the cards.
Right. Injuries.
Recovering from injury, not enough of a team to surround him.
Right.
And, you know, allow him to do what he is capable of doing.
Right.
I think, you know, I think Robert Lewandowski is in a similar position, like, minus the injury. You know, it's just like a lot of ability,
yeah,
but
I know.
You know,
they didn't do shit.
Yeah. But there's only so much. I think, you know, watching this World Cup only reinforced the idea that the era of there being like one star on a team that carries the team through really doesn't happen anymore.
But, or so, I agree with you, but then there's something that says, not that I disagree with you, it's like, so say you have one star. I saw teams with no star do better than teams with one star. So yeah, is whoever's coaching that team with one star, you have to coach the entire team in a way that will benefit everybody and the entire team.
Yeah.
And 'cause some teams did that with no star and got further. Like, England is all hodgepodge. Mm-hmm. Like, it's a bunch of players. We got Harry Kane, but he didn't dominate. Like, he did not. Him being like the name guy on the team didn't make it. It didn't force Gareth Southgate to be like, let's kind of build a team around him. I think Southgate, mm-hmm, built a team.
Yeah.
You know, a team that only got this far because of the formation was like pretty amazing. Like, defensively, to have three defenders and two midfielder / backs, mm-hmm, like, you're picking the best players and you're Voltroning the best style for your team.
Yeah.
And did the Polish coach do that?
No. Well, I mean, yeah. I don't think the Polish coach did that, and I don't think the Polish coach had any intention of doing that.
Right.
I don't think the Polish coach has enough talent in his country on the caliber that England does, at least right now, to build a team like that.
I don't know, man.
I think when you're a country like Poland, or you're a country like Egypt, it's like, all right, who's the best at playing this position?
But then you say Croatia is the second smallest team to reach the World Cup finals. So how did they do it? Poland's bigger than them. Unless Poland is the first smallest. And I don't know who was the smallest.
I mean, Iceland's a smaller nation, but they all, you know, they play
Iceland
very
played
well
better.
As a team.
Yeah. They made it. They made it into. Did they make it out of their group?
No.
No, they didn't make it out of their group. But they gave it a shot.
Yeah.
They gave it a shot.
And they fought hard for it, and mm-hmm, it didn't end up working out for them. But, you know, I think if you have a team with, it's like you're saying, when a team has no stars, it's easy for them all to be selfless and work for the sake of the team. And when you have a team that has multiple stars, it's easy for those teams to be selfless.
Not all the time.
Not all the time, but
because
I think
Argentina has so many stars. When I was looking at highlights of Argentina, like, and I'm like, who the fuck are these guys? Like, I recognize most of the people on the bench. Like, in that game against France, I'm like, besides their midfielder, defensive holding midfielder, he used to play for Barca with Messi and Di Maria. I'm like, they didn't start Dembala. They had Sergio Ramos, Sergio Aguero on the bench. Higuain was on it. I'm like, who the fuck are these guys? Like, what's going on over there?
That I don't know. I mean, I think it feels like a coach that's sacrificing talent for people that can just like feed it to Messi.
I know he was back there trying to feed it to. That Argentina is just another story.
Yeah, but I think if you have a team that has one star, I think coaches can get drawn into like the concept of just like building around like feeding it to that player.
Yeah,
but once you mark that player up,
then what's the rest of the team going to do?
That strategy's a wrap.
I've been trained to pass the ball to him, but he's occupied now.
He's got two defenders.
So what do we do?
I guess we just pass it to each other. Nah, it can't work.
So let's pass it to them. Let them attack, and then and hopefully they don't score, and we get it back, and maybe he'll be free.
Yeah.
All right. Great plan.
Yeah.
See you when you go home to watch the rest of the matches after the group stage.
Yeah. See you at a friendly next year.
Yeah. Any? What did you like most about the World Cup?
I liked that although there were complaints about people diving and there were complaints about people, about stuff that, you know, maybe didn't go the way people wanted it to go, I feel like in the end, the best team that was the most consistent ended up winning the whole thing.
Right. Yeah. Despite everything. Right.
Yeah. In spite of everything. I think the cream still rises to the top.
And I asked you about VAR before on another podcast. Has it changed? What's your opinion on it now?
I think it's just one of those. It seems like it's going to be the new normal, and I think as we as a people and we as a soccer community become more familiar with VAR, and as refs become more familiar with VAR as more like this team of, you know, 8 or 9 people that are coordinating this to review, look at plays.
Uh-huh.
You know, our games are now being refereed by committee.
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think they'll get better at discerning plays and not, you know, just looking at things in slow motion and looking at things like in real time.
Right. I'm laughing because you mentioned committee, and I'm laughing at how the guys, like, pressure is a motherfucker.
Mm-hmm.
They had those committee of referees who've been on the field and ref games before, sitting at that monitor staring at that penalty thing for France and Croatia. And they're like, fuck it, it's your decision, guy on the field. I like how they just like bailed on him. They're like, we don't want this on us. We're not making this decision. Hey, man, you got to make this call.
Yeah.
And then he had to sit in front of the VAR machine like for 5 minutes going in back. It was like, fuck those guys up top. They could have helped me out with this.
Yeah.
And now this is all on me. And if I make this call one way, I'm going to get shit on. I make it the other way, I get shit on. Fuck those 5 guys. What, the fucking 5 guys in the booth can't make a decision? Now I got to make this decision.
Yeah.
I love the way it was just so hilarious how they just bailed on him, you know, and put this weight of the world on this one guy's back.
Yeah, I think if you're going to be a referee, you got to be ready to own the decisions that you make.
Yeah, it's a big moment to step up to.
Yeah. And, you know, I used to referee like little kids soccer games. And the one thing that parents valued even at that age was as long as you were consistent and you know, you did your best and you stood by your decision, no one really bothered me.
Right.
But if I started to, you know, waffle on a decision, that's when people start jumping on me.
Right.
So you just got to make a decision.
He's a waffler. Get him.
Yeah.
You got a waffler over here.
Yeah.
A waffler in zebra stripes.
Yeah. Yeah. Are we in a stadium or are we in a Waffle House?
Yeah.
My dad would referee games all the time and I would tag along with him as a kid. And, you know, he just.
So you learned that from him.
Yeah. That's cool. He made his decision. And if players complained about it, I was like, man, get away from me.
Yeah.
I don't have any. I made my decision. I'm not, and he had no VAR.
Uh-huh.
So I mean, it's like,
because players are like flies. Like they see a piece of food and they all swarm it, and then you try to. I've seen referees trying to establish the SWAT.
Yeah.
And I SWAT them away, and then they'll just someone come around his back. He got to turn around, and it's like, oh.
Yeah,
these flies are vicious. They're not trying to.
Yeah, and the players especially gather around when they think there's a bullshit call because flies are attracted to bullshit.
That's not always bullshit. Sometimes they're trying to get over too.
Sure.
And here's the thing. My thing about VAR is I think it works. I think it works overall. And there were people who would have gotten away with things that they wouldn't that didn't get away with things that they could have if there wasn't VAR.
Yeah.
And I also recognize that VAR sounds wonderful and amazing, but it's still not as easy to solve problems, specific problems on the field with it as I thought it was going to be. It's like, it's better, but it's not perfect. And people are going to point at the imperfections. But now I realize there's never going to be perfection.
Yeah.
And I also realized, but it stops some of the bullshit that was going on.
Yeah, or the what could have been.
Or the what could have been. And then, so we can't lose sight of the what could have been.
Yeah.
And also, I guess the last thing is, I think players are going to evolve and still figure out a way to get around VAR because they're fucking human.
Yeah.
And they still want that edge to win.
Yeah.
And they're going to do shit.
Yeah, I think players are going to figure out how to draw fouls better.
Right.
I think, or they're going to become better actors.
Right.
I think, you know, I think the bad acting will probably dwindle.
You got to be Oscar worthy to win it out here with this VAR.
Yep.
You got to sell this shit.
You got to be Meryl Streep on that
field. Yeah. You got a method act. You got to hire acting coach. Mm-hmm. You can't just have somebody just walk off the street, take a dive and think they're going to.
Yeah. I think.
Get something. Get a call.
Yeah. I think a lot of people were claiming about, you know, claiming that Neymar was, you know, the source of a lot of those issues, at least with the drawing of fouls and diving. Mm-hmm. But what I could see as something that Neymar could do to reacquaint himself with the people as a star is if he became like the Daniel Day-Lewis of diving. Where it's just like, I mean... You sold me on it, even in the replay.
So you mean he should go to his own Neymar diving school?
Yeah.
And not just teach, but also enroll?
Yeah.
All right. And be better at it?
Yeah.
All right.
I could see that happening.
All right. So, I mean, I think he's done enough diving, but...
He could also just become a better player.
You know what's funny? He was doing something at a time when the culture is ready to change.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, that's another thing. It's like, you ever get caught in a walk outside in a shirt and that style is over?
Mm-hmm.
That's what Neymar did the whole World Cup.
Yeah.
Like we're not doing baggy t-shirts no more. Hip-hop style has changed.
Yeah.
What'd you think of Mbappe?
I mean, Mbappe delivered. You know, he showed that he was a player that was, in a way, wiser beyond his years. I think he still has a lot to learn.
Yeah,
and I think hopefully that wisdom continues to grow with him.
Mm-hmm.
He's 19.
Yeah,
you know,
it's crazy.
It's a great stroke of luck to win something that great at that
the greatest
such a young
thing
age.
Ever in football at that age.
Yeah, but, so my hope is that he doesn't become complacent or rest on his laurels, and hopefully he continues to grow and continues to, you know, really be exciting to watch on the field.
I heard, well, what I think of Mbappe is way more than I thought of him before the tournament.
Yeah.
And I watch him play.
I didn't think much of him before.
Yeah. I saw him play for Monaco. I saw him win the league. I saw him go far in the Champions League that year with Monaco before they loaned him to ultimately sell him to PSG.
Mm-hmm.
But I would watch PSG for Zlatan, and then Zlatan left and then he came over, but I didn't watch it for him. I watched it for Neymar.
Yeah.
And then
he was a supporting actor in that game.
And then he wasn't fitting in, but he'd get some goals.
Sure.
And he wasn't the Mbappe of Monaco. Plus you have Cavani. Like you there's killers there.
Mm-hmm.
In Monaco, you were the killer.
Yeah.
And you with Falco, but now you're like with Cavani and you got Neymar and those guys are arguing. So you throw this 18 or 17, almost 18-year-old kid into like this feuding locker room, and he's young and he has to like also try to take goals away from Neymar, and he sees how Neymar's reacting to this shit with Cavani. You're not going to get the best out of him. And I think he definitely felt completely comfortable around his French teammates, and they encouraged him. Mm-hmm. And then because of his comfort, he showed us some shit that you don't see him do at Monaco.
Yeah. Yeah. Or at PSG.
That you don't see him do at PSG. My bad. And then, you said he was born fortunate. I think he's also born fortunate at this time to have the set of teammates that he had. Mm-hmm. Timing is everything.
Yeah.
And timing is when you're born and who you're born with and around. And it's like they have this great group, and you probably also had the right amount of injuries, like Payet being injured. Yep. Gave him...
Koscielny being injured.
Koscielny and whoever else, you know, like... All right, we got to play the kid, you know? And there's other great kids on the bench, like Dembele. We didn't see Dembele. He got bought for a lot by, you know, he's up, like, but they played this one, you know? And that Argentina game, I was like, who? I thought the Flash was an American hero. I did not know that motherfucker was black and French. Because that run...
At the beginning, yeah.
At the beginning, that turned into a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
It, like, people say the term shot out of a cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen so much soccer in my life, but I just don't remember seeing that shit.
Yeah. I don't know if it's the resolution on the TV, but the only time I've ever seen someone run that fast with the ball and, like, beating people was, I think, there was one game I saw Luis Figo do that.
Right. Yeah, Figo used to do shit like that.
But
yeah.
He didn't do it all the time.
Right. He did it. That was his thing. But I guess
it's been a long time.
It's been a minute.
Yeah.
But that shit was like, and then I was talking to you on the last podcast about, so I don't know, if this is true or it's just his father saying this and why his father said it, that he got bullied in the PSG locker room, Dani Alves. And Neymar just said he's just fast and he ain't got no skill. But, I don't know if they just fucking with him and he doesn't see it as teasing himself. This is somebody else besides him saying that.
Mm-hmm.
But I do know he is more comfortable with France completely because he was comfortable enough to do some of the things that he did that he doesn't do at PSG, like I said before. But he does have skill. That's the thing.
Yeah.
He does have skill. Like his intricate under pressure with man on you passing shows me, like the running and chasing the ball down and kicking, that's one thing. But his passing lets me know, his intricate passing lets me know the world is in trouble.
Yep. And, you know, those... It's possible that, you know, even players like Neymar and Dani Alves could be intimidated or they were just joking.
Right.
But yeah, we're not in that locker room, so it's hard to tell what the real intention is.
I just know that the his status at PSG last year, his status right now at PSG is completely different than the status of last year. Like when he goes back, like it's night and day now.
Yeah.
And they bought him with hope of him being who he ended up being in the World Cup. And he's 19. They're a rich team. They can afford to keep him.
Yeah.
So
it's a wise investment.
And they might sell Neymar.
Yeah. They might send him to Real Madrid.
So then he should have a better year than he did last year.
Yeah, and if they sell Neymar, then it'll be the Mbappe show.
Yeah, keep Cavani and then two of them to strike and then set up the team around.
Cavani can play like Giroud.
Yeah, and he gets goals.
Yeah.
I like Cavani, man. I really like him. It's sad that he couldn't play against France to really push France.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think the game would have been different. I don't know if Uruguay could have won it, but it would have been different.
Doesn't help when your goalkeeper, I was looking at that goal and I was like, damn, I hope these people forgive that Uruguayan goalkeeper for that Griezmann shot that he pretty much parried into the net. Like, there was some swerve on it.
Yeah. I think they will.
Yeah. Anything else you want to say? It's over, man. I'm going to, you know, chill for a minute.
Yeah. I can sincerely say I can chill on some soccer for a little bit.
2 weeks, a week.
Yeah. Until Premier League starts again.
Yeah, which is August.
Soon. Yeah. It was very exciting, and it was worth watching, and it was worth all those hours I spent away from people I love and care about. Right.
That's hilarious. I know it was. Like, how do you tell them that, baby? Trust me, not seeing you is worth it. how do you break that? I miss you. I gotta go.
Yeah.
For me, I feel like, you know, in Greece, John Travolta ran into Olivia Newton-John's character at the beach in the summertime, and then they had a summer romance, and they thought they'd never see each other again. Mm-hmm. And then I think she ended up going to the same school as he. And that's how, that was like kind of the premise for the whole thing. I feel like I just had my summer fling, and I won't see my summer fling again till 40 more years. That's how I feel about the World Cup. Like, it was a great summer romance.
Sure.
You know,
it's a nice way to put it.
Yeah. It was a great summer romance, and it's over, and I'm going to miss it, 'cause it lives on another part of town or in the world.
And, yeah. I didn't know you were so into Greece.
I remember things from it, and that's probably the only thing I remember from it. Yeah. Because it makes a good analogy.
Yeah, it certainly does.
Yeah, now Greece was dope, man. Everybody loved Greece. You didn't love Greece?
I enjoyed it. I didn't know that was not what I expected for the closing of this episode.
Yeah, so, man. I'm full of surprises, bro.
Pleasantly surprised.
Yeah, I'm romantically surprising, bro.
I love it. So. Yeah. Well, hopefully the next tournament we see, whether it's the Women's World Cup or the Euros or just, you know, upcoming Premier League season, ends up being just as exciting.
And they're going to have like a lot of tournaments like Real Madrid and Manchester United and AC Milan. They're coming here. I'm going to go to games, but I'm not going to do any podcasts. I'm take a break. And right before the Premier League starts, get back at this.
Okay.
You want to go check out one of those games at the StubHub Center? Because I think...
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I think Manchester United is coming. I don't know if Pogba's coming. He's going to be on vacation, but you get to...
Yeah, imagine if he's not on Cyprus or something, just chilling.
Yeah. He's got to take a break. Yeah. I think he celebrated harder than he played, and he played really fucking hard.
Yeah. Yeah. If those guys aren't all in the Seychelles.
Yeah.
Just... not, you know, just on some other side of the world, I'll be sincerely skeptical.
Yeah, the only thing they should be doing on their feet for the next week is getting massaged on it.
Yeah,
that's it.
Yeah,
man. So yeah, it's been a great World Cup. Hope you all enjoyed it. Thanks for listening. And anything you want to plug?
You can go to my website, StuartThompsonComedy.com, if you want to figure out where I'm going to be performing. At Stuart B. Thompson on Twitter and Instagram if you want to figure out what I'm doing.
All right, and you can't go to my website, IanEdwardsComedian.com, because I still didn't make that one phone call to put it back up yet. And but you can get at me on Twitter at IanEdwardsComic and on Instagram. I fuck with Instagram the most. So you can get at me on Instagram at IanEdwardsComic too. And this will be posted on SoundCloud and it will go to all the other places. And again, this World Cup was worth waiting the last 4 years. I'm glad I turned down a job and I was employed for the whole thing. Now I regret it. But yeah. And I'll call you when I wake up 4 a.m. to get ready for the game.
Sure.
Tomorrow.
Yeah. Yeah, we'll go meet in the middle of Hollywood.
It'll take me like a week to. And thanks for the parlor.
Yeah.
We had fun there.
Yeah. Good venue to watch the games.
Yeah.
People were nice.
Yeah.
Service wasn't too slow.
Yeah. And I ran into the manager guy yesterday. And I said, hey, man, thanks. And he's like, thanks for coming. And he said, come back for more shit, just not the World Cup. It's great having us.
Sure.
Like he's talking to me because he knows we all come there. Mm-hmm. So he's talking to all of us.
Oh, that's nice of him.
He's talking to me for all of us.
Yeah. You were the sounding board.
Well, I saw him at the end of the day.
Yeah.
So yeah. When,
yeah, man. Well, yeah, hopefully there'll be something else fun to watch there.
Yeah, yeah. It's cool. Only thing I regret was that the Grove had the fucking game, and I didn't know that.
Mm. Yeah, it looks like people were sitting outside, though.
Yeah, that's true. People probably died yesterday.
Yeah, LA hasn't been a very good outside city lately.
It's been hot as shit.
But anyway, this has been funny, Ian.
It's been fun. Thanks, Stu. Yeah, really appreciate it, brother. I'm shaking your hand like I'm not still in your house and you're not going to have to watch me pack this shit up. All right, fam.